D-Mace, Vingen, and Donick, 102.5 The Game. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingen, and David Janes here with you. I hope everybody is having a wonderful Friday. How is everybody doing in here today?
Very good. I'm glad it's Friday.
Derek's doing something. The show's on, Derek.
We're setting up.
I know the show's on.
I was just, we're digging
digging into my
3 hours of
my big bag.
Outstanding sports talk radio.
We have to.
You got to lock in.
We have to get some things. We like making fun of one another on this show, especially when things happen before the show that makes one of us laugh.
Mm-hmm.
And Adam.
Yes.
I mean, I told Willie because Adam. And he knows Willie's schedule. It's like he knows it. Like everybody in this studio knows it. Don't worry, Willie will be here.
But he'll be always on time.
He's always on his time, which is on time. And
like
at around 2:50, Adam, where's Willie? Where's Willie? Every 3 minutes, where's Willie? I'm like, I don't even say something half the time, but don't worry about it. Willie will be here. Willie be here? Don't worry. So, Willie, will you just please let Adam know that you will be here? Like, you're going to come. You're here.
You got to trust.
Yeah.
Trust
the process.
Sometimes, I'll be honest, sometimes I get a little worried. At 3 o'clock, I'm like, where's Willie?
Willie's going to be here. I know Willie.
Well,
he's going to be here.
D-Mace, I have news for you.
Yes.
The same thing happens when we're on a remote. It's like, did Derek?
Yes.
Did he make sure? Does he know that we're out here
today? It's happened a couple times.
Does he know that we're over here today?
And I come just rolling in right before. It's like,
well,
you know our tendencies now. That's what makes a good team. We know each other's tendencies.
In fairness to Adam, there was that one time you did come to the studio first.
Yeah,
there's always
right
that one time.
That one time.
It all takes, apparently, to Adam is the one time, and then forever it's going to be a worry.
It's a big issue.
Willie's timing is impeccable. He shows up at 2:59:58, right as the intro starts playing. So.
Well, if that's the case, then...
It's like the starting five. You know, you get announced for the starting five, you pop off the bench, right? You know, you come right through.
Willie is the last person.
Yeah.
We know it.
Yeah.
So
what you're saying is Willie is the Michael Jordan or LeBron James of our team. He's the last one off the bench when the starting lineup gets announced.
A 6'3 senior from Maitland, Florida.
He's Wilt Chamberlain. He's the Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. He's the Mark Eaton. He's the whoever was called last, the big fellas.
We're giving him a little credit.
He's the Shaq.
Well, like Paul McCann at the Preds games. And in goal.
There we go.
That's what you do. Number 35, Pekka Rinne.
Oh, I'll talk about that later because you just gave me an idea for the show. But I'll talk about that later. But go ahead.
What's on your mind?
We're going to announce
the starting five of our show.
The starting three? We should. That's the way we should announce our show. It should be. We'll talk about it later.
Do we need the Alan Parsons Project? Like the Chicago Bulls?
If we're going to do it
right. If we're going to do it right.
Yeah. We got to have something like that.
And from Vanderbilt. See, we just got to do it.
All right. Well, we'll get to that.
Yes.
Busy show today. Chad Withrow from Hot Mike with Hutton and Withrow will join us at 3:20 to talk about the college football playoff, the Titans coaching search, and much more. We'll break down NFL wild card weekend from a Titans perspective. We'll get into the latest on the Titans coaching search. Excuse me, the Predators win again. We'll talk about them too. But we start with the first of two college football playoff semifinals. Last night at the Fiesta Bowl, Miami wins 31-27. An outstanding fourth quarter, 25 combined points, 4 lead changes, and Miami heads to the national title game, which happens to be played at their home stadium, Hard Rock Stadium, on January 19th. They are the first team to play for a national title in their home stadium in the BCS/CFP era. And I will be asking Willie Donick once again if he owes Miami an apology. He refused to do so last week. Now that Miami beat another SEC team to get into the national title game, I'm going to ask Willie again. But first, Derek, your takeaways from Miami's win against Ole Miss last night.
I think we talked about it yesterday, what it would take for either team to win. And my thing was, if Miami plays defense the way they had been playing the past two games prior to this, then it's going to be hard to beat Miami. But if you can't stop that high-powered offense of Ole Miss, then, man, you're going to have troubles. And Ole Miss do have a defense. It's not like it's a great defense, but they do have a pretty good defense. Well, what you had was a team that in the second half, meaning the Hurricanes, that defense came to play. They were coming from – that game should have been worse as far as score-wise than what it – it shouldn't have been that close. Miami dropped three, and I will repeat, three, maybe four, interceptions in that game. That would have been 3 to 4 turnovers that the Hurricanes would have had. And let's just say they scored 10 points, 10 out of the 28 possible points they could have scored. That would have been a blowout in regards to this round in the college football playoffs. I think Ole Miss played a hell of a game toward the end. That offense with Chambliss, I mean, Trinidad, that kid is fabulous. He runs that offense, and he operates in that offense like no other. It's hard to stop him. He's sort of like Diego in a sense. It's that two-headed monster that he has. He can throw the ball. He's more accurate than Diego, but he can run the ball just as well as Diego. And at times, the Hurricanes had problems with it. But when it came down to stopping them, when they had to, I mean, that Canes defense, I mean, they put pressure on them. I think those last, even though they end up scoring, they put pressure on Ole Miss toward the end that sort of got to them a few times. But that ended up being, I mean, if that was the national championship game, I would be all right.
Yeah, it was,
I would
a great
be
game.
Completely all right. That was a fabulous game.
It was a fun finish back and forth. You did get the feeling there were just a few more seconds.
Yes.
If there was just a few more seconds that Ole Miss had, they might have gotten the buzzer beater. But hats off to Miami. You got to give them credit. They started the year, I think, with a lot of believers that they were really a national title contender, but it was sort of erased when they had the slump three quarters into the season where they lost the two games. But full marks. Carson Beck, right, has had his ups and downs in his career. He can look really good and really bad. And give him credit, man, for orchestrating that last drive. Fantastic work.
Okay, Mr. SEC snob over there. And by the way, we will be discussing the SEC in just a little bit because the SEC has now been shut out of the national championship game again. But Willie, you refused to apologize to Miami last week. The Hurricanes have knocked out two SEC teams in the CFP. Are you now willing to apologize to Miami?
No. And here's the reason why. It's nothing against Miami. Everybody who gets a chance to make a run in a postseason tournament that makes a run deserves full credit for making that run. It's not about that. It's about who deserved to be in the – to give the – who deserved to get the chance to begin with? And I'm watching the game with a lot of people that happen to be Vanderbilt followers like I am to say, why couldn't Vanderbilt or Notre Dame or anybody else that was just on the outside looking in, why couldn't they have made the same run? It's all about opportunity. Miami has made the most of the opportunity, but I don't think it says, oh, yeah, they should have been in there over XYZ. It easily, just as well, could have been Notre Dame or Vanderbilt or one or two other teams as well.
I don't think it's about who should have been in there. I think it's about what have they done since entering into the college football playoffs. And Miami has proven that, you know, their style of play has gotten them to the national championship. I'm not sure if Vandy was playing the type of defense that Miami was playing. I'm not sure if Notre Dame would have been able to play the defense that Miami was playing. You look at Notre Dame's schedule. They had a weak schedule toward the last eight. But Miami showed that style of defense that we didn't see. I didn't see that style of defense from being that aggressive from Vandy all season. Now, they were good. Right.
But you know why you saw it from Miami? Because they got a chance to play.
Exactly.
And they did it. How do you know Vanderbilt couldn't have had a great run of defense?
They could have.
We don't know.
They could have. But what the last thing I seen of Vandy, and I love Vandy, love what Clark Lee is doing, and I think they're going to be in the same position next year, if not in the playoffs. They didn't show, like, in their last game we saw, they played horrible defense. And I get it. It was just a bowl game. But they were only missing one guy. And that one guy's a hell of a player, but he was on offense. And offense still was able to score points. But from a defensive standpoint, I'm just being fair in this situation. The last time we'd seen those teams, well, Notre Dame opted to not play, so I don't – the hell with Notre Dame. But the last team we saw that had an opportunity that we were sort of conflicted with was Vandy. And – I get it. It's just they didn't show the best Vandy. They didn't show the best version of Vandy that we've seen on defense. That's all I'm saying. And I know it's a national championship run and the playoffs, but Miami could have just as well. They didn't show. They could have just Miami, well got blew
if,
out.
If Miami got snubbed, which it looked like they were going to, and they went to a bowl game and
I would say I would be saying the same thing.
It easily could have happened that way too. The bowl game is not the same intensity where everybody's at their best. So I go back to the process of selecting the teams is different than giving a team full marks for peaking at the right time. And that's what Miami's done. Full marks for Miami. But the fact is they got a gift getting in from a weak conference where they weren't the league champion. They really were questioned whether they were in there or not. And somebody was going to get screwed either way. Miami was lucky enough to get in there. They made the most of it. I give them full marks. But I'm not apologizing.
Wow.
No.
You won't apologize to the Canes?
No.
Wow.
No.
You better watch out because Michael Irvin may take that belt and come after you, Willie. But in all seriousness, we did a lot of belly aching, and a lot of people did a lot of belly aching about the college football playoff bracket. But what we're seeing is what I think a lot of people wanted to see. For the second year in a row, a team that wouldn't have sniffed the four-team college football playoff is going to the national championship. Ohio State last season and Miami this season. And it's sort of this new world order of college football, the final four teams, Oregon, Indiana, Miami, Ole Miss. Now, Miami does have a storied history, but the Hurricanes have been wandering in the wilderness.
They've been in dormant
for the past 20-plus years, right? Mm-hmm. So, look, we were upset by Vanderbilt's exclusion from the college football playoff bracket, but overall, this is what you want, right? There is much more unpredictability in college football in the postseason now because of the 12-team bracket, so we're getting what we want, right?
Yeah, we're getting what we want. What we want as far as competitive game, exciting games. Now, people want the first round to be fixed. Not letting some of these teams in that are eventually going to get blown out. But here's the thing: do I think that the SEC or the Big Ten has overtaken the SEC, or the SEC remains the top sort of conference? Look, from top to bottom, the SEC is the stronger conference. But now moving forward, we're not ranking them based upon top to bottom. It's who gets in, and then we rank them upon based upon that. It's no longer – because now we're saying these bowl games don't mean anything. So now it's the Big Ten has jumped the SEC when it comes to beating them in just regular bowl games. Now it's everybody saying, no. We got to change the rules here. Nope, that don't matter anymore. Well, before, it mattered. Like, when Big Ten and SEC played in just bowl games, it was the SEC reigned supreme. Look at what we're doing, not just in the championship games, but in the bowl games. But now all of a sudden, the bowl games don't matter? That's why I said, and it's cool, but now the field has changed. The requirements have changed. Now we're only ranking 16 teams. Because that's eventually what it's going to get to.
Yep.
We're only going to talk about 16 teams. damn the rest of them. I don't care if the Big Ten win all of their bowl games outside the college football playoff. I don't care if the SEC wins their bowl game. It doesn't matter. You know what matters? Who's in the top 16?
And we will get more into where the SEC goes from here. Again, the SEC shut out of the national title game in college football for the third year in a row. It's been a very long time since that happened. Here is a bit of breaking Titans news before we get to Chad Withrow. According to Jordan Schultz, the Titans plan to interview Mike McDaniel for their vacant head coach position. Jordan Schultz writes, quote, "This is the first known interview for McDaniel, who also has interest from other teams, including Cleveland, for its head coaching job." So Mike McDaniel planning to interview with the Tennessee Titans for the head coaching position.
Also, I don't know if it's in that press conference, but they are also planning on interviewing Xavier McDaniel, the X-Man from the Seattle Supersonics. I mean, who are they not interviewing?
This is what I'm talking about. Do not. Didn't y'all
They're interviewing exactly, everybody.
Didn't y'all hear me yesterday in particular about McDaniel? You don't want that guy. You don't. He's going to change
offensive coordinator?
Yes.
Is that, so that's the inside,
offensive
right?
coordinator.
I mean,
maybe
that's
yes.
pretty, he's not a pretty bright coach. Offensive mind.
Not a head coach. Offensive coordinator. Not a head coach.
Well,
you see what
he walked
into Miami as a schoolboy.
It's clear what they're doing. Just bring everybody in. I want to meet you. I want to talk to you. And let's just see, do you fit?
He walked in as a schoolboy, walked out as a Tony Montana. No, I don't want that. No. OC, yes. The shine ain't on him as much, okay? There you go. But that's just me and my two cents when it comes to McDaniels.
What about Xavier McDaniel, the X-Man? A good rebounder?
Hey, if it works.
He's in the movie Singles, you know, played for the Knicks.
I do want to give a shout-out to Brian Callahan,
yes.
who interviewed with the Buccaneers for their vacant OC job. So good for you, Brian Callahan. And it would be good for Brian Callahan to get hired by another team, right?
Because yeah, because they get him off the books.
Yes. So cheer on Brian Callahan to get another job. Callahan
job.
Interviewing for the Buccaneers offensive coordinator position. 615-737-1025. Our phone and text lines are driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. We'll take your thoughts on Miami's win against Ole Miss in the Fiesta Bowl. Miami headed home to play for the national championship on January 19th against either Oregon or Indiana. That game coming up later tonight. 615-737-1025. Coming up next, Chad Withrow from Hot Mike with Hutton and Withrow will join us. We'll talk college football playoff. We'll talk SEC, and we'll talk Titans head coaching search with our friend Chad. Coming up next, 615-737-1025. We are broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick, 1025. The Game Nashville Sports Network is your home for the college football playoff tonight at 6:30 on 102.5 The Game. It's number 5 Oregon taking on number 1 Indiana in the Peach Bowl. The college football playoff is presented by Twin Peaks and Parman Tractor and Equipment. Let's go to our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com.
No comment on the musical theme?
I like the music.
I mean, it's Friday.
It is Friday.
I like it.
It may be before my time.
Yeah. It was definitely before your time. Yeah, okay. But that hasn't stopped you before. You could go back in the annals.
I can. That is true.
Just not for that one.
Just not for that one.
You don't know about Yarbrough and Peoples?
No. I'm sorry.
Yeah, he don't.
Let's get to Chad.
He like, huh? Y'all who?
It's like,
who's people?
People? What?
Let's welcome in Chad Withrow from Hot Mike with Hutton and Withrow on Outkick. So, Chad, Ole Miss's elimination last night means the SEC has been shut out of the national championship game for the third year in a row. This hasn't happened since the turn of the millennium. So how should the SEC feel about that?
First off, Willie, the only Yarbrough I know is former Tennessee Vol Hooper, Vincent Yarbrough.
Vincent Yarbrough, yeah, I can see that.
You just taught me something, too. I like that I walked into a house party also. That was great.
Yes. I don't think there's any relation.
No, I don't think so either. Look, I think that the SEC, it's not a good look. You know, it's three straight years, no national championship appearance. I would still contend top to bottom. You know, the SEC is better than the other conferences from this respect. If you told me I had to go to Kentucky or Arkansas or Auburn versus going to Maryland and Purdue in some of these other programs, I would still prefer to go to the bottom of the Big Ten and play a game. But the difference is, guys, that the top conferences are not just as good, in some cases better, than the SEC. So there's not that elite team anymore that's just far and away more dominant with talent than others. We know Ohio State's roster and how good it's been and how many NFL draft picks they've produced. They're as good, if not better, than any roster in college football. Michigan has gotten that way as well. Now you see what Indiana is doing with a roster that has talent, but not that elite high school recruiting talent that we're used to. They're doing it a bit of a different way in the transfer portal. But I really think the Big Ten's a good example of that. It's just changed. I think everything in college football, the dynamic has shifted so much. NIL has certainly helped other conferences as well. I think it's helped a number of SEC programs too. But I think you just look across the country and there's better football being played in different conferences. And by the way, I think that's a great thing for the sport. I think people hating on the SEC is a good thing for the sport. Sometimes a little dislike or hate is not a bad thing in sports. And I think that people are taking victory laps around the SEC, honestly, is a good thing nationally. And it's time for the SEC to step it back up and produce one of those dominant teams that can make a national championship game.
To that point, Chad, what must the SEC do to adjust to reassert its dominance?
I just think a team needs to emerge that is dominant. You know, it's been one thing or the other. You know, Ole Miss loses their coach going into the playoff, and they still play well, but that's not the dominant team. Georgia, I thought, was the dominant team coming in, and they got involved in a great second half and trying to beat a team twice and lost in the second half. Alabama, let's face it, it's not the Nick Saban Alabama. It's not an Alabama fan's birthright to be as good as they were under Nick Saban. It's just not the same program. They're not feared anymore. It's very different with that program. So is somebody else going to emerge as the dominant power? I would still lean towards it being Georgia or Texas or one of the more predictable programs that's going to be that. But it just takes one of them becoming a little bit better and getting hot at the right time and not running into a bad matchup and all of that. You know, a year ago, both Georgia and Texas had a shot. I think Georgia had a pretty good shot, but they go up against Notre Dame with Gunnar Stockton, who had never started at quarterback after Carson Beck got injured in the SEC championship game. So, you know, that's not a great opportunity for an SEC team to advance. I don't really know that there's one magic answer other than one of these teams at the top of the conference just has to get a little bit better to get over the top again.
Now, Chad, we say that, but in today's football, what do we classify as dominant? Is it the old way we did when Alabama was winning, you know, championship after championship every two or three years? Or is it just a team winning a championship but then being in the playoffs? Because what you said is true. Because of these head coaches are leaving and this has happened, but this is the world of college football now. I don't know if there will be a dominant team anymore. Basketball went through its phase where it was dominant teams, but then all of a sudden the landscape changed. And now you had dominant teams as far as from a historical standpoint, and we always like to watch Duke and these other teams, but when you're talking about winning championships, now it becomes a little bit more diverse in who wins it.
I totally agree, D. Mason. And the fact that we aren't going into every college football season just saying, oh, it's either Alabama or Ohio State or Clemson or Georgia or name another program, right? Most years in the last 10 or 15 years, we could point to mm-hmm. 5 to 7 teams. LSU would be in that mix occasionally. Auburn might be in that mix. But we'd throw those teams in and say, it's going to be one of these 6 or 7 teams. I think that pool of possible teams to win it all has expanded. And I think that's a great thing for the sport also. And what would I define as dominant? It's not multiple national championships in a short time. It's a team that can get to the quarterfinals year in and year out. You know, I consider Ohio State to be a pretty dominant football program, right? They won it all last year. They got knocked out after getting a bye in the quarterfinals this year. Still pretty good. You know, they lost their last two games, but I would put that level of, you know, Georgia also is another one I'd put in there. If you consistently feel like, well, the floor is the quarterfinals of the playoffs, then you are a dominant program, even if you aren't just routinely winning national championships the way Nick Saban was at Alabama. And in terms of this season, what is dominant? It's Indiana. I mean, I can't point to anyone else, but I point to them at undefeated and, you know, challenged in that game in Eugene against Oregon, but won by multiple scores, and then challenged at Penn State, but found a way in on a day where they didn't play very well. That's dominant. In today's college football, this Indiana team is the most dominant. But, guys, they're going into a game tonight where I think a lot of people, the trendy pick is Oregon because it's going to be so tough for Indiana to beat them twice. But I'm not betting against Kurt Cignetti.
Now, what did you see from the Hurricanes that would make you believe, and I don't know if you think they can win a national championship or not, but that would make you believe they could win a national championship?
A dominant front seven. That's the envy of everybody in college football. I mean, I think I watched that, and they would be great for any team to have that level of aggression and those guys up front. And in that second half, I mean, I thought their offensive line was fantastic. I think the way they pull their guards, the way they get things in motion. I mean, I saw a 17-yard run where he was untouched until 15 yards down the field. And I'm thinking that's just expert offensive line play from Miami. So I do think in the trenches, they're outstanding. And that's what I saw last night. You know, the way we thought about the old SEC was those Alabama fronts, Georgia fronts that now all play for the Philadelphia Eagles, their offensive lines. I watch Miami, and I think that's in the trenches, that's who they are. They're Alabama. They're Georgia in years past. They're LSU. That's how talented the front and the offensive line for Miami is. So that's what I saw in that game, and that's what I've seen from them consistently. They had held the ball for over 41 minutes last night. In time of possession. They physically dominated Ole Miss, and Ole Miss hung in there and played pretty well late and got the turnovers and took advantage of penalties and all of that. But I really think watching it, Miami was the much better team in that game.
Chad Withrow is with us. And Chad, what did you think on a related topic here, the decision for Chambliss? Because I think we all got to really like watching him play. But it's that same dilemma, right? You can't stay in college forever. Not everybody can be Thornton Mellon.
Yeah. What was it Tommy Boy said? You know, hey, a lot of people go to school for 7 years. Right. Yeah, they're called doctors, yeah. I think David Spade said. That must be you, right? No, I'm just always surprised when the NCAA at this point just decides to say no to anything because if we've become so accustomed to them just kind of throwing their hands up and – you know, releasing a statement saying, hey, guys, we think this is ridiculous, too, to bring back, you know, former NBA first-round draft picks to play. But, you know, we really can't do anything until Congress does something and gives us an antitrust exemption is what they want. Because they know that if it goes to federal court, they're likely to lose. So when it comes to eligibility stuff like this, they still do have some teeth. And obviously they can rule, and they did on Trinidad Chambliss. But, I mean, I don't know where this goes. I saw Tom Mars release the statement. I mean, I know they're going to continue to do things legally. They're talking about we're going to get a fair hearing in Mississippi judiciary. And I'm thinking, yeah, that's going to be real fair for the NCAA when you go in front of Mississippi judiciary about whether or not the star Ole Miss quarterback can continue to play for one more year. So I think it's all a mess. I thought the Diego Pavia thing was a mess, quite frankly. Worked out great for Vandy, but I don't think that's good overall for the sport. I think Joey Aguilar gets another year of eligibility, while great for Tennessee, is bad for the sport overall. But what do I think right now is going to happen? I think he'll probably get an extra year. I think Chambliss will. I think that Joey Aguilar, if motivated to continue down that path, is going to get one as well. It's just, it's crazy to see all this, Willie. I'm with you, but we've entered an era right now where if you push the envelope and you continue to pay lawyers, you can probably get what you want out of this.
I don't like it. I don't like it at all. So, Chad, where do you think Ole Miss goes from here after the whole fallout, right? It was a great run. They almost got to the final, which would have been just a great story with everything, and it still was a good story. But now they've got to figure out where they're going.
I love what Pete Golding said about all these other programs. They sell tradition, and they show people their Heisman Trophy winners and their national championships, and he said something, you know, like, well, not a damn person in those rooms did that. They didn't win the Heisman Trophy. They didn't win the national title. We sell trajectory at Ole Miss. You know, and that sounds great, right? He said, we're selling that this is a player-led, you got the infrastructure, they've got resources behind it, and we're all about where are we going, not where have we been, which is what you have to do if you're a program with not a ton of winning success. like an Ole Miss. So I think they got the right guy for the job. I think this playoff run shows that with Pete Golding. I got a couple of friends who are really tied into Ole Miss, Willie, and I talked to them about it. They're very optimistic. Even before the wins in the playoff, they said, look, Ole Miss has money. They've got support. Walker Jones is a stud athletic director. They've got what it takes to put money into it and make it work. Sorry, Keith Carter, athletic director. Walker Jones heads up their collective, which you can see how I'm confused because they're kind of one and the same now. Walker
both
Jones,
very important jobs.
Yes, both very important. Walker Jones, the Grove Collective, he's got his money in order. They've got their system in order. Keith Carter, great athletic director, and they love Pete Golding. You know, this to me is the great test study of can you go with an unproven coach, maybe pay the head coach a bit less, and allocate more for staff, more for analysts, and more for roster, and go win at the highest level. Because, quite frankly, I think it's insane to pay anyone that's not Kurt Cignetti or Kirby Smart $13 million a year right now to be the head coach. Because I would want more of that money going towards roster if I'm one of these programs. So I think it's we know what Ole Miss was this year, and that was a program and a roster built by Lane Kiffin. I'm really interested to see what they look like moving forward. If they can continue some of this success, I think it's a good template for other programs to follow.
It is an interesting theory about the allocation of resources. It was almost like a money ball, like everybody's rethinking. And, of course, Moneyball, one of the things they did was they thought that the manager of the team was less important than some other than traditionally was the case. So I wonder if that will play out in time. Chad, real quick, a question on hoops. Vanderbilt and Tennessee will play each other twice late in the season. They don't see each other for a while, but in the meantime, they're both going to try to rack up some wins here. Tell me what you're seeing with Tennessee right now.
Yeah, I think with Tennessee, it's a team that still is looking to get completely connected. You know, I think you kind of take for granted with Ziegler and Meshack and all those guys around for so long, just how together that group was the last couple of years that made that run to the Elite Eight, led by those two guys. This is almost a completely new team, you know, other than some returning guys in the front court. So I think it's taking some time to get together. I think they're starting to do that. They got to go play well on the road. You know, they've yet to play a good road game so far. They've got the big win over Houston. They gave them their only loss on a neutral court. But they need to go play well in a true road game. We know how good they've been under Rick Barnes at home. I don't see that stopping anytime soon. And really, they got to hit their free throws. Because, you know, in this league, when you get into these games,
there's going to be some high foul games if anything is true from Memorial Gym the other night.
Imagine if Vandy, you know, shot 42% from the free throw line, shooting 80 free throws or whatever it was combined the other night. You know, they're not winning that game. So if Tennessee hits free throws on the road at Arkansas, they win. And they get the biggest win early on in the conference on the road. That's been a real bugaboo for this team. And with the margin so razor thin when you play good competition in the league, especially on the road, you got to hit free throws. And this team just has not done that. They were a little better on Tuesday night against Texas in Knoxville, but they got to go on the road and play well at some point and notch a big road win, and that's what I'm looking to see from the Vols this season.
Chad Withrow has been our guest on D-May's Vingan and Donick. He joins us every Friday, and of course you can hear him with our friend Jonathan Hutton on Hot Mic with Hutton and Withrow on OutKick. Chad, great stuff as always, my friend. We'll catch up next week.
Always fun, gents. Have a great weekend.
You as well. 615-737-1025. All right, we've talked about it a little bit already, but we're going to do more of a deep dive into this subject. Has the SEC reached a crossroads of sorts now that it has been shut out of the national title game in college football for the third year in a row? We will discuss that coming up next. 615-737-1025. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025 The Game.
Been terrible. Now, I'm sure somebody at the SEC office is whispering, hey, don't forget, Ole Miss could win it all. And that would solve some of the wounds. But this has been a long year for the SEC. And I think in the end, because I kept wrapping my arms around Alabama and saying, Stephen A., did you remember what they did? They went through that gauntlet in the middle of the year. Well, right. A lot of those teams they beat really weren't very good after all. They lost in bowl games and they looked terrible. Right. So it's a rough year for the SEC. Ole Miss is it. Regardless of the Lane Kiffin story, which I know we're going to talk about, but there's no if Ole Miss loses Thursday night And I'm sitting around having to defend this league to you, Stephen A., saying, oh, no big deal that it's three straight years without an SEC team in the national championship game. I mean, there's no defense. Well, it's been rough.
That was Paul Feinbaum earlier this week, before Ole Miss lost to Miami last night in the college football playoff semifinal. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan here with you. And when I heard that clip earlier this week, guys, it reminded me of something else Paul Feinbaum said at SEC Media Days. All the way back in July, we talked about this article from the Wall Street Journal back in July with the headline, "The SEC confronts a new college football opponent, panic." And the closing quote from Paul Feinbaum in that article in the Wall Street Journal was this, quote, "I understand the narrative, but for now I think it's way premature. A two-year sample is simply not enough. But if we're sitting here having a cup of coffee at the national championship game and the SEC isn't in it, that will be the moment. The angst will come." Well, that moment is here because the SEC has been shut out of the national title game for the third year in a row. So I want to start with our resident SEC snob, Willie Donick. What does this all mean?
What it means is pretty simple to me. I don't think the SEC is doing anything wrong. I think it is just a product of having too many teams in the league and too many powerhouse teams in the league. They beat each other up. It is very difficult to dominate, as we just talked about with Chad. So with all of the NIL and how it has started to distribute itself across college football, where the tier below the dominant teams have closed the gap on the teams at the top, it simply makes it more difficult to stand out and dominate your league. And I think it's especially true in the SEC, where everybody that plays in the league is, now including Vanderbilt, bringing something to the table. You're not going to, and that is not the case at the bottom of the other power leagues. I still think there are a lot of teams that are a tier below what you see week in and week out in the SEC. So I think that's the thing that they're going to have to deal with, and they made their own bed by taking Oklahoma and Texas, two more heavyweights in there. You have an unbalanced schedule. So I think this is going to be an issue a lot. Because I think Chad hit on it. The way to say it is, it's harder to have a team like Alabama or a program like Alabama who had that dominant run for a while. Tennessee had it for a while. Florida had it. Georgia's recently had it. I'm not saying it can't happen, but it's harder to have that now in this league because of the way the NIL has taken over.
Derek, some numbers for you from bowl season. The SEC went 4-10 in bowls this season, 2-8 when not playing against each other, and 1-8 against other Power Four teams. The two wins, when excluding games where two SEC teams were playing each other, were Ole Miss beating Tulane and Texas beating Michigan. That's it. So I know that the non-CFP bowl games don't matter as much, but that's it's a bad record. It's a bad record.
Listen, this is this is listening to them. This is SEC snobberish to the foolish. To the fullest, I mean.
SEC snobbery to the fullest. Do you hear that, Willie?
It's like oh, the world's about to end. Why everybody else is like, what? I got on shorts and I'm at the beach and I'm doing this and I'm doing that. Everybody in the world is okay. But the SEC is like, oh my goodness, everything's about to end. No longer are we on top. Duh. The world's not about to end and y'all are not on top anymore as of right now. Y'all will be okay. It's this, what the SEC, maybe they realize it, maybe they don't. But the fan base, let's say this. This is not your parents' SEC anymore. This is not young Derek's SEC anymore. This is not young Willie's SEC anymore. This is not even Adam's 10 years ago SEC anymore. The landscape has completely changed. And you know who don't like it? The SEC. They don't like it. Oh, my goodness. Now everybody get a chance to compete with us. Oh, we can't win championships. We can't do this. Just pull up your big boy pants and play some football.
I think that's what they're going to do. I think they have to realize that it's not going to be as easy to dominate for the reasons I think I put out there. I still think it's the best league from top to bottom, and I still think it's not
what makes
close.
You say that?
I'm
if,
not
if
worried
they
about
haven't the won a national championship in the last 2 years, and they're not going to win it this year.
Well,
a team representing the SEC.
I'm not worried about the bowl performance. I think that's more of an anomaly, and there's more of a wild card to each bowl game individually now. But the not winning the championship for three straight years, I think a lot of it is it's harder to dominate, and the path you have to take to get through the SEC and through a long road of playoff games, at least three, that is a war of attrition. That is hard to get
SEC,
all the way through.
Stop whining about it. Y'all claim y'all are the best. You claim you're the best.
They're
conference.
They're the best conference.
If you're the best conference. When you get into the playoff, you need to win, and they haven't won.
How many
stop
SEC teams were in the 12-team field?
Stop screaming.
Five.
Stop right? screaming about. Y'all had eight. Y'all had five opportunities to make it to the college football playoff. Championship game. And all five times, y'all whiffed. Okay. The landscape of college football has changed. I'm not even going to say the Big Ten is dominating, because I know the pendulum can swing very quickly with the way these kids are transferring. I'm not even talking about the coaches leaving. Coaches have been leaving, going and coming for many years. It's all about how much money can you come up with to go get these transfers that are jumping in the portal, and some are forced to go in the portal every year. Prior to this, Alabama, Georgia, they can hoard, five-star talent, and they couldn't go nowhere. And
right.
That's why Saban was like, no, I don't want anything to change. All these coaches, I don't want anything to change. Well, now that things have changed, it has leveled the playing field, which I think
yes.
is the best thing for college football.
But it's also leveled the playing field within the SEC, especially, too. So I think it's compressed everybody. There used to be more tiers because of what you're talking about. Mm-hmm. And now I think those tiers are much closer together.
So you're saying the top teams are much closer to the bottom teams in SEC?
In the SEC. And I'll give you an example. South Carolina struggled, right? Mm-hmm. South Carolina was a preseason top 15 team that had a bad year. They still are able to build a 30-3 lead over an undefeated Texas A&M team. That is what I'm talking about.
But that happens in all sports.
No, it doesn't. That never used to happen.
That happened.
Tell me when a bad Vanderbilt team could build a 30-3 lead against an undefeated team.
I'm not even talking about Vanderbilt. I'm just saying in football in general, things like that happen. Then what happens? The team that ends up being the better team more than likely ends up coming back the second half because of the way college football is and scoring up and down the field. They end up coming back in the second half and end up winning. That happens in every conference across the board. But yet and still, I don't think that the top of the SEC is any closer to the bottom in the ACC than it was 5 years ago. You may have your anomalies. I hope Vandy, the way they've been playing over the last 2 years, it stays the same and it stays consistent. But more than likely, you're looking at all these teams, there's going to be a regression. And it's going to go back to being the top-tier teams and the bottom-tier teams in all conferences around the U.S. It doesn't matter. But what has happened is all the top teams in every conference, it's become more of a level playing field, because now we can, almost, in a sense, trade players, because
yeah.
that's what's happening. Free agency is every year.
I would equate it to when the NFL or the NHL put a salary cap in.
Mm-hmm.
It made it different for teams. Like, the Red Wings were dominating in the pre-salary cap. They had way more money to spend. If you spend it smart like they did, they were right in there every year. when they put the salary cap in, they were still really good, but it was harder to win because more teams were closer to them. It closed the gap between their advantage and the bottom of the league. And I think that's what's happening across college sports, that it's the distribution of funds and talent because of the free flow has leveled, it's closed the gap. It's going to be harder for any league to dominate, including the SEC. And the SEC has the extra layer of all 16 teams are in the game fully, and so it's going to be hard to dominate within the league.
One texter says, "Preach, D-Mace. That's why Saban quit. He knew that the Alabamas were no longer going to be the only ones playing." Caleb says, "They had two matchups against each other in the playoff, which proves Willie's point." Another texter said, "How many SEC games were in the playoffs that weren't against each other?"
Well, the Big Ten now has one. So, essentially, you could have had two Big Ten teams in a national championship.
Alabama beat Oklahoma in the first round. Mm-hmm. So, that was against each other. Mm-hmm. Ole Miss beat Tulane. Miami beat Texas A&M.
Ole Miss beat Georgia.
Ole Miss beat Georgia. Indiana beat Alabama.
And, well, it wasn't until the second
round. And Miami
beat
Ole Miss.
Yes.
So those were the SEC-related matchups in the
right. So there were two games in which SEC beat eliminated SEC.
Mm-hmm. Yes. 615-737-1025. We will continue this conversation and take your reaction as well. 615-737-1025. What does it really mean that the SEC is national titleless once again? And not just not winning the national title, not even being in the national title game. It's the third year in a row that the SEC will not even be playing for the national title game, let alone winning the national title. 615-737-1025. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025 The Game.